Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for January 14th, 2019. It's a Monday.
Yes.
And here we are again.
We keep trying to do it on Saturday, but it doesn't work.
Well, sometimes it works, and then other times it doesn't work. So, today we had three things we thought we could talk about. Two Anglican things, and I can't remember what the third one is already.
Little snippet of Queen Victoria we watched last night.
Oh, right. Yeah, some reviewing of a television program. Because we haven't been watching Con Marie, we accidentally watched...
I didn't know Con Marie was like where she goes in and actually... Con Marie's for people's houses.
Yeah, that's the
problem. I thought it was just like some, here's how you can do your stuff.
No, I mean, we could watch it because it's on Netflix and the way that we watch things. Like, we've watched all the Monty Dons.
Yeah.
So we could watch the the Con Marie's and then we would be able to say more what we thought. But we didn't do that.
I like better just talking about things we don't.
That's true. It is better.
We can just criticize things without having watched them.
Yeah.
Because we know what they're all about anyway.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. But I think we should leave that one for last. We should do the annoying Anglican stuff first.
Yeah.
Because okay. We're here for you as your Anglican news.
Correspondence.
Anglican correspondence about Anglican news that you would not be interested in were we not to constantly bring it to your attention against your will.
Now, see, they should be, if we have evangelical people who are listening, they should be interested because the Episcopal Church meltdown was the precursor for what's happening right now in the evangelical world. Exactly what happened in the Episcopal Church is happening to
only
them.
Only potentially weirder because there's no structure.
Maybe. Right, there's nothing to stop. I mean, if
it's just Twitter. So.
I've heard several Southern Baptist churches who are beginning to embrace the same-sex blessing stuff.
Gonna go ahead and do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So all that can happen to them is that they're thrown out of the Southern Baptist Convention.
Or not. I mean, it's so loosely structured. I mean, it can just, that's the thing. It can just spread like a plague. But again, you know, even in a really well-structured hierarchical organization like the Episcopal Church, it spread because no one took action, you know?
The whole structure goes down, though, in that case.
Right.
There's nothing that can...
Right.
Yeah. So, well, which one do you want to do first? Should we do Bishop Love first and then...
Yeah. So, how do you want to do it?
So, there is one remaining in the Episcopal Church in America. There's one remaining Orthodox Christian diocese.
Right off the bat, you're giving incorrect information.
Okay. So...
there are several bishops who are Orthodox in the Episcopal Church.
But, right. but Bishop Love...
Bishop Love's the only one who actually is doing... who is refusing to go along with the... Okay, so we should back up.
But there's more... Bishop Love has a lot of churches, like, in his diocese that are Orthodox.
Yeah, but so does... Bishop Brewer.
Oh, okay. You know, could... I just want to say a long time ago, what with when we left the Episcopal Church, it's been really hard for me to, like, wake up in the morning and be like, hey, I wonder what... Let me read intensely about important news in a church that, in other words... Leaving the Episcopal Church was one of the nicest and most comfortable things that ever happened to me.
Yeah, well, but at the time we left, back in 2007, there were still pretty solid Orthodox dioceses in the Episcopal Church. We just weren't in one. And so...
We left.
We left because if we hadn't, you know, and I had been run over by the bus...
Don't say the bus, though, because lots of people have actually been run over by the bus. Like, we actually know people who are now have been run over by a bus, so that goes away. You have to come up with a different thing.
If I were really run over by
the flu, that would be better.
But if I were really run over by a bus or whatever, dying, if I were to go to the home of the dead, then
Sheol, when your gray hairs go down to
right, then the bishop at that point in time would have had a lot of influence over my succession.
Yeah,
and that would mean the our church, the Good Shepherd, would have been subverted and destroyed from the inside. So that's why that's one of the main things that was driving us to say we got to get out of here while we can.
Right.
But if we had been in an Orthodox diocese like Albany at the time, maybe we would have stayed. I don't know.
Yeah.
But now, the last General Convention, which was this last summer, they put forward they passed a canon that said, not a canon, a resolution that says that B012 that says that every bishop in every diocese must make it possible or must make it give access to couples and to pastors who want to, or priests who want to perform same-sex marriages, at least where those marriages are civilly legal. So if you're an Orthodox bishop in a state like New York that allows same-sex marriages, and you say, I think this is blasphemy and sin, and so I'm not going to allow it in my diocese, you can't do that anymore. Now you have to find a bishop who will come into your diocese and do it in your stead, or you have to make some arrangement so that the couple that wants to be married, quote unquote, will will be able to be married, or the priest who wants to perform the marriage can do so. You can't stop that.
And you have to make the arrangements essentially with your own time.
Right.
At your own hand.
Right. And that's, you know, that would be, you know, if we were talking about, you know, something like, I don't know.
Baptizing a baby?
Yeah, baptizing a baby, which I don't think Anglicans are able at leave to not do. But
right.
But let's just say,
supposing some people wanted to baptize babies and other people didn't want to, and you didn't want to.
So you could go, yeah.
You could arrange for somebody else to come in and baptize that baby.
Because you're not participating in that baby's destruction.
Yeah, you're actually, I would argue, making it better for the baby.
Right, I would say that too. But when we're talking about same-sex marriage, we're talking about unrepentant, defiant move into a state of life that, if not repented of, will keep you out of the kingdom of God. So no Orthodox bishop, being the shepherd of his diocese, can allow it. And that's why, I mean, I said there's some Orthodox bishops in the Episcopal Church remaining, but I think with the passage of B012, it's now impossible. I mean, you can't be in the Episcopal Church as an Orthodox bishop and remain, because now you're being forced to do what God forbids, or...
How come all the resolutions every time sound exactly the same? B0, whatever. They all start with B.
Or A. There's A and C resolutions. And
different. They should name them things like the Jezebel resolution. Or the
Sodom resolution.
This is the resolution where the lions come in after the Assyrians.
And devour the people of the land.
And they devour the people of the land until you get in a sort of hapless prophet who's like, I think you should worship Yahweh. And then the lions quit for a little bit.
Right.
Until it's all over.
Yeah, but it does bring up a question. You can't. It's a little bit like someone saying, when you ask about abortion, yeah, well, I'm personally against abortion, but I think it should be legal.
People. Why should it be legal?
Yeah, if it's murder, it shouldn't be legal. And so there's these Orthodox bishops in the Episcopal Church still who hold personally Orthodox views but are willing to allow people to destroy their lives in their diocese. So, yeah, I personally don't believe this is true. This is right and good, but hey, I'm going to make it possible for you to go ahead and marry your partner, which is a complete betrayal of these people who... as a bishop, you're supposed to watch over. So thanks be to God, Bishop Love didn't do that.
Right.
He's a quiet guy. You know, he's really soft-spoken, and he's not confrontational. He's not anything like, you know.
You.
What? I was gonna say he's not anything like someone who, you know, kind of flies off the handle or.
I was gonna say you are confrontational. You enjoy a good. You don't fly off the handle.
Right.
But you enjoy a good battle on a Monday morning.
I'm a lover, not a fighter.
I'm sorry, I almost spit. Well, his name is Bishop Love.
Right, so it fits.
You have
good.
Nothing on him.
Right.
Okay. Your name isn't even close to that.
he's a quiet guy, so I should have. Because he's quiet, you kind of think he's not really going to do anything. It's deceptive. You might think he's, you know, less willing to stand up. But of all the bishops remaining in the Episcopal Church, he's the only one who has. And so I really respect what he said. He was at GAFCON this last summer.
I thought we weren't supposed to know that.
Oh. Maybe I misidentified him. It must have been someone else.
I mean, there were a lot of bishops
there. Yeah, maybe he was wrong.
There were a ton. They were just a sea of bishops.
Anyway.
Every which way you looked, your eye was met with just what seemed to be thousands of purple dresses.
Right. So there's two. What are the routes open for him? I mean, he can just. Well, we should say now Bishop Curry.
Yeah.
Remember, if you don't know who Bishop Curry is.
So Bishop Love put out a thing saying you can't do same-sex blessings in my diocese.
Right.
Under no circumstances will you do that. And if you do, you will be in big trouble. Mm-hmm. So no, don't do that. And that's what precipitated. He put out something publicly, too. Like he wrote a letter.
Right.
So now Bishop Curry has responded.
Now, if you don't know who Bishop Curry is, if you watched the royal wedding,
he's the guy that preached the sermon you all loved so much.
Oh, it's so loving. It's so about so love great. And love. and
how if you just work hard enough,
you can love more and God will be really happy with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he's a heretic. He's a much more dangerous heretic than his predecessor. What was her name?
Catherine Jefford Shorey.
Right, who was just, you know, she was actually demon-possessed.
Because
she had this voice that...
She had a voice.
I mean, you kind of expected her to speak Latin backwards. And
yeah. So, she was sort of, woo.
She preached that sermon defending the demon-possessed girl. In Acts chapter 16,
yeah.
Who Paul delivered and said Paul just wasn't open to alternative spiritualities.
Yeah, and he should have listened.
He should have listened to her.
Because he could have learned something.
And people listen to that stuff. To tell you how bad the Episcopal Church is, people react. There's very little outcry within the Episcopal Church. People outside the Episcopal Church were appalled, but in the Episcopal Church.
Tuesday.
And I can understand, because we heard sermons like that.
All the time.
In the Episcopal Church. But anyway, yeah, he's much more dangerous because he's likable. And in fact, when he was...
Well, and he uses Christian language better than she does.
Yeah.
Like, he sounds more real when he says things like, I love Jesus.
Oh, yeah. He said, we need to get back to the Jesus movement.
Yeah.
And that's been his big thing since he's been presiding bishop is, you know, we're shrinking because we're not talking about Jesus enough. We need to talk about Jesus more. And, you know, amen to that, except the problem is that the gospel, and he said this, articulated this clearly over and over again, the gospel for him is love your neighbor and love God, love your neighbor.
Yeah.
So, and that's the good news.
Get
out there and do that, right? And of course, that places a huge burden on you because what does it mean to love God? It doesn't mean that you have really warm, fuzzy feelings, tingles going up your spine.
I think it does mean that actually. It just means that you feel angry about the right things, and you feel happy about the right things, so you are really angry about certain political issues, and you feel really warm happiness about other, you know,
but it's not just
cultural
that.
Things.
It's not just that, though. You have to tweet about it.
Yeah, then you tweet.
Because it works. Because faith without works is dead.
That's true. So.
So if you just leave it with
I
your feelings.
I'm going to say, like, faith without Twitter is dead.
Right, you got to tweet it. And then you got to go after people who don't tweet things that
yep.
you like.
And then God will accept you. You will have pleased God.
That's loving God. So, but you know, Jesus said, though, if you love me, you'll do what I say. Which is
no,
what you say to
I
me,
mean,
actually, quite often.
I do say that. And I say that to my children, too.
Right.
If you love me, you will literally do what I'm saying right now.
So if you say love God, love your neighbor is the gospel, then that really means, okay, you must now go out and obey perfectly all of the law contained in the scriptures, because it's all Jesus' law, and that means you're doomed to hell. So that's not good news. But that's his gospel, and that's the gospel he was preaching at the royal wedding.
Yeah.
And of course, he's always been in favor of same-sex whatevers. He's always been in favor of that, and he's been promoting it, and it's a horror show because, again, you're leading people into hell.
So he has inhibited mm-hmm. Bishop Love.
Well, not inhibited. He's restricted his ministry so that he said he's still bishop of the Diocese of Albany, and he can still perform all the functions of a bishop except the disciplinary functions. So he's prohibited from rebuking or censuring or bringing disciplinary action against any priest that performs same-sex quote-unquote marriages, or stopping in any way anyone who wants to have a same-sex marriage in a church building or on church premises or performed by church people, which is before what he said. He said you're not going to perform a same-sex marriage. You're not going to allow the space of any Episcopal church to be used for a same-sex marriage, and you're not going to promote them in my diocese. So that ability of him as bishop has been restricted.
So what is his next move?
Well, his next move is to... he said he's submitting to the...
Oh, really?
This is where I think... he's not changing his mind. He's saying he's submitting to the discipline, and he's appealing the...
Well, what does an appeal do, then?
Well, he thinks he's going to go have an ecclesiastical trial. I mean, the bishop is doing more than just restricting him. He's also taking the first steps that could lead to his being deposed. And that's, I mean, if you read the letter that Bishop Curry sent.
I don't think you should read the whole
thing. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but he writes, where is it?
What's interesting about this is that, you know, if Episcopalians had taken real action against that, disciplinary action against that actual heretic bishop of the whatevers, you know, years and years and years ago. You know, like the Episcopal Church.
Oh, you mean
not
when Bishop Spong ordained a gay man or one to get
before
a,
that, there was somebody.
Oh, Bishop Pike.
Pike.
Yeah.
Like if the Episcopal Church has never enjoyed the idea of discipline, like that's just not a thing. Nobody was. You could always cross your fingers when you were saying the creed. You didn't have to believe anything
right.
in church. You could just go and enjoy yourself. And no standard of life or doctrine was ever, ever, ever enforced until you wanted to actually be biblical
mm-hmm.
in your life as a Christian.
I mean, the kind of social, cultural development that we've seen where the only kind of thing we don't tolerate is quote unquote intolerance. That was long time
yeah,
in the Episcopal
that
Church.
Long,
that was
that
that's
was
been
the
that
foundation.
Was been the norm in the Episcopal Church for years
for
and
the,
years and years.
And
right.
I mean, the key though was that you were allowed to believe the creed if you wanted to. You know, you were tolerated as a Christian to some degree.
As long as you didn't make others feel uncomfortable about not being Christians.
Yeah.
So in the, that was a big thing in seminary, that people were fine, I think, if I were Orthodox and others with me were Orthodox. They were
Especially when you gave out your notes so
right,
everybody
and it
could
helped.
pass their classes.
But when you say, for example, that Bishop Swing, who comes and teaches on John chapter 14, verse 6, where Jesus says, "I'm the way and the truth and the life, and there's no way to the Father but me," and he says, "There's plenty of ways to the Father but through Jesus."
I'm just gonna go ahead and say right now
Yeah,
that this isn't
and
true.
you say that's not true, then you're, you know, you've stepped over the line of gentlemanly Episcopalian behavior, or gentle
Yeah.
personly
Personally. Yeah, don't be a bigot.
Episcopalian behavior. So that's been the thing. It's you might wonder too, if you're not going to an Episcopal church, why would you even go if you don't believe in Jesus?
Because you enjoy the social functions.
Well, that, and it's, you know, the Episcopal church can
It's
be,
friendly.
yeah, it's very friendly, but it's also, yeah, it is. It gives you a sense of class too, and beauty, and
And I think you sort of, with the liturgy, you experience something of the, the numinous, the divine. You go and you enjoy the incense and you
Yeah.
feel connected to your fellow humanity. It's like being you to
The
unitarian.
liturgy can be beautiful in a liberal church.
And it can sort of
Not maybe
feed
now, but
you
it could have been a while back.
in some sort of vague way, as long as we don't talk about it too
It's
much.
a little bit like, you know, an evangelical growing up in, I don't know, the General Reformed or General Regular Baptist, what is it called? The
General Association of Regular Baptists.
going to an Orthodox, Eastern Orthodox church for the first time. And, you know, your senses are going to be, oh my God, just, you know.
Yeah, it's where
I
you
mean, you're
sign on
not,
the log.
and so you see it and you think, oh, this is beautiful. And you sign on the dotted line, become Orthodox without really looking through what they're believing. But that's, and you could even worship for years in an Eastern Orthodox church, not knowing some of the very problematic gospel-less doctrines there. But the same thing is hap can happen. That's what happens at the Episcopal church. You go, you love the liturgy, you play the, you dance the dance, the
In some cases, literally, you dance the
literally some
dance.
cases. But that's where it's not beautiful anymore, I think. But let's not get into that. So anyway, so Bishop Curry is the one who's doing this. Bishop Love is fighting it. I don't think there's going to be a way out for him other than just ultimately either being actually deposed and then going to do something in the ACNA or some other jurisdiction. But I think it's the only faithful way out if he doesn't want to just leave before things get heated up.
Yeah.
I actually think it might be good for him to be persecuted this way.
Yeah.
I mean, for him to go through the process of actually being deposed
Yeah.
will display once again
Yeah.
that the Episcopal Church is incapable of any kind of conversation
Yeah.
or dialogue or
Tolerance.
tolerance, right? Yeah, I think
That's not a thing.
the public display of Bishop Love being hounded like this should say all that the culture needs to know about
What tolerance really looks
tolerance.
like.
Yeah. Not that it will change anything, but we'll see it. Or I think it's really important for the evangelicals to see what goes on
That's true.
to in the Episcopal Church with Bishop Love.
If you think you can take common bread with people who deny the basic tenets of the faith and
Yeah.
who embrace this particular heresy, you're just asking for other people to be eaten by the alligator first before you yourself are.
Right.
So, anyway, we should pray for him. Along with all the other things we should pray about.
Yeah.
Should we talk about our second
Oh,
brilliant Anglican
yes.
thing?
Yeah.
Because the Anglican world is so
It's just
functional.
unraveling. I mean, so I should also say for people in our church and people who are in other types of Christian churches,
Actual
that
Christian.
we're talking now about the Anglican Communion, but not all Anglicans are in the Anglican Communion. To be Anglican is kind of just describing the way that you practice Christianity, using the prayer book and adhering to the articles and the use of liturgy and that sort of thing. All in the tradition of the Church of England as it was established. But the Anglican Communion is a new thing. So I think it was only established in
It was part of the the remnant of the British Empire.
Right, right. So we as we as part of the Cana East Diocese in the ACNA are not connect. We are not part of the Anglican Communion.
Not part of Canterbury.
We're not part of Canterbury. So we're talking about these. You know, you shouldn't think that we're. Oh wow, how can we be part of this organization? We're not, which is great. But we like to look on from afar. Yes, yes, because the Church of England is very, and the Anglican Communion is a very important organization. It's in the middle of, you know, destroying itself, but because of, well, I think the Church of England's influence and the Archbishop of Canterbury's refusal to do anything to discipline churches like the Episcopal Church is leading to its demise, like fast and rapid demise. Remember when Bishop Welby became Archbishop of Canterbury and everyone said, oh,
he's an evangelical.
Finally we have an evangelical. And I said, I'm sorry, I'm going to toot my own horn here.
You're going to say every time, too.
I will keep saying it. I said, don't trust this guy. He's a snake in the grass, because I've been reading his stuff for years before he became the Archbishop of Canterbury, and I knew he was a compromiser, and he was so... And I said that publicly. And people said, oh, no, give him a chance, give him a chance. No, he does, he's. Why do you think he's elevated to that position? Why do you think the big monkey monks in the Anglican in the Church of England allow him to take that authority? Because he's already said he's going to allow the liberal heretics to continue to consume the church, which he's done. That's what I mean. And so now, how long has it been since his elevation?
Oh, well, it's been a while now, hasn't it?
Yeah,
we've been. I don't know.
So now you can use baptismal liturgies to celebrate someone's transgender transformation or whatever it is, and renaming them by, you know, hey, you were...
By use of baptism.
Yeah. So if Bruce Jenner wants to become a Church of England person,
he can
have a baptism as Caitlin.
And, well, you can't say that he's not a woman, because that's... What is that? There's a church in California that put on their big sign.
Bruce Jenner is not a woman.
Not a woman. And they're being prosecuted.
Yeah, right. And even, I think the pastor who did that's being fired by his own church.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put that on our sign. It's true, but I mean, I think
that I know, just, it's a strange thing to do. Sunday services are at 10:30.
And by the way, Bruce Jenner is not a woman. I mean, maybe that it's come to that. I don't know. Maybe the society is to that point where you just have to say these things
randomly on your church sign.
kind of like Cato.
Carthage must be destroyed.
Carthage must be destroyed. Bruce Jenner.
Yeah, maybe at the end of every conversation, whatever it is that you're saying. Have a nice day.
Bruce Jenner is not a woman. So, yeah, I like that, actually.
It could also...
What does it sound like in Latin? I guess Bruce Jenner's a name, so it doesn't really...
Carthago de Landa Est.
yeah, no, I know. What is not
We'd
a woman.
We have to look up...
Is not a woman.
Let's have our children do it for us.
Yeah.
They know that kind of thing.
Yeah.
We'll tell them as part of their...
I could do that in Greek, but it wouldn't be the same effect as...
Yeah,
had.
I think...
Yeah.
It should be Latin.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, right. That's our job. For next week, we'll come back with a...
What were we talking about?
You were going to say that we haven't even gotten to the... You have to stop doing back explanations. Also because...
People need context to understand what they're talking about.
No, because they can go back and listen to all our archives. You can't...
But this is not our archives.
No, but what the Anglican Communion is, you have to stop saying what it is every time. After a while, nobody cares anymore.
They do care. Everyone cares.
The internet is forever. People can go back. They can Google, what is the Anglican Communion? Just read this brilliant, brilliant piece, because Archbishop of Welby has done something wonderful. He's done a wonderful thing here.
All right. This is from the Telegraph. I'm not agreeing with you. I'm just reading because we have time. Constraints. I think you're totally wrong. I think that people need to know about the Anglican Communion.
Every single time.
Every single time. It's written. When Peter wrote his first epistle, I think it was, he said, I'm reminding you of these things, as I often do, because he has to remind people, let us know. So
I just, you're not the Apostle Peter, though, and this podcast isn't the
book. That's what teaching does. It reminds people of things all the time. All right. So a row has erupted within the Church of England.
A row? A row.
Why does that? Why do English people speak so ridiculously?
It's row.
Why not just say a fight or a disagreement?
A vague disagreement that doesn't have any impact or bearing on anything. Okay.
Okay, so a row has erupted within the Church of England as senior Anglicans are calling on the Archbishop of Canterbury to force his ambassador to the Vatican to resign because he does not believe Jesus rose from the dead. So...
Oh, Patrick.
So your ambassador, the one who represents the Anglican Communion to the See of Rome, is...
Doesn't believe Jesus
rose from the dead.
But does the See of Rome even care what the
ambassador... I don't think Francis cares. I think Francis is fine with it. I guess they had to accept his credentials, but I mean, I think...
I mean, but they don't... Anglicanism isn't such a thing where they're like, oh, no, we can't have a heretic in here. Because then they
would
wouldn't
have cast
be able...
out the English long ago.
Yeah. Like, right. Who even cares? I mean, this guy is just going to get to have lots of nice lunch times.
I mean, I guess Bruce Jenner could be the Anglican representative to Rome. Wouldn't be a problem. Because that's just what Anglicans do.
Yeah.
Anglican communion people do, not Anglicans.
Yeah, there's...
Maybe I should explain that again.
No. Please don't explain it again. Oh, my gosh. Are you laughing so much that you can't read the article?
It has emerged that Dr. Shepherd, an Australian cleric...
Oh, yeah, and read the date on this one. It emerged. So we just discovered this.
Right. Which is something that he preached back in 2008. I'm sure that it's something that he's been preaching consistently.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not...
2008, so yeah. 10 years on... We're just discovering that this
guy
doesn't
wait.
Doesn't believe in the resurrection?
There are Anglicans out there who don't believe in the resurrection. That's, no.
That's crazy talk.
It's emerged that Dr. John Shepherd, an Australian cleric appointed last week as the new representative to Rome, had delivered a sermon in which he said Christians should be set free from the traditional view of the resurrection.
Is that like being unhitched from the Old Testament?
Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will set you free.
From having to believe...
That I rose from the dead. That death is really... You shouldn't have to be constrained into believing that death isn't really your prison, because it is. We're going to set you free from the idea of believing that you're going to rise again, because Jesus rose again, and so that you can live into the new and wonderful truth that actually death is the end.
Yeah, death is the end.
You're done.
There isn't anything after
sin
this.
And death still reign, and you're
so,
sorry.
Sorry. Sorry.
Don't you feel free?
I do. I feel great now.
The controversial comments delivered while he was...
I take issue with that. They're not controversial at all.
They're just
again,
heretical.
They're just normal. Monday
not controversial
morning.
It's Tuesday.
Yeah.
The controversial comments delivered while he was dean of Perth Cathedral, that's in Australia, have been...
People can Google Perth.
Should I explain where Perth is?
No.
And how the history of the Perth Diocese
No.
is? The controversial comments delivered while he was dean of Perth
okay,
Cathedral...
Okay, so he was dean of Perth Cathedral.
Yeah.
He,
but
not
I'm
believing
sure.
in the resurrection, fast tracks you to cushy and fancy jobs in... Anglican circles. Like, believing in the Anglican, in the resurrection, is going to cause you, in fact, not to be fast-tracked towards any sort of comfortable clerical position.
Well, you know, I'm sure his bishop didn't understand that he believed that kind of thing before he appointed him to be
dean. Oh, really?
You think
the bishop didn't, like, ask questions like, hey, man, do you believe in the creed? Have you read the Bible? I don't think he's probably read the Bible. Well, he probably did and thought it was boring and stupid.
Well, okay, so it's important. Here's a quote from his sermon in 2008.
Okay.
And he preached on Easter Day.
Yeah.
How much did you go to church? Hey, kids, get your Sunday dress on. And...
I'm going to tell you. I went to church on Easter Day, Cornell, to the Cornell chaplaincy, which I loved. I loved the chaplain and I loved the chaplaincy. But on Easter Sunday morning... The sermon was about cloning.
Why was it about cloning?
Well, I mean, it was an interesting philosophical exploration
the
idea of cloning. And
so why did he preach about cloning?
Well, what? No. Why wouldn't he?
Did he just like explicitly say Jesus didn't rise from the dead, but we have this new cloning thing?
I mean, I'm pretty sure he said, like, Jesus probably didn't rise from the dead. Like, I don't really know if he did, but I'm pretty sure he didn't, because things like that don't happen. But let's consider rebirth. And I've been reading a lot about cloning this week, which really interests me, and I'm going to share everything that I learned.
You said you went home from church crying several times at that chaplaincy.
And I just like to point out that the chaplain, who's a wonderful man, didn't believe but was really sweet. His solution to my angsty belief in God, which seemed to trouble me so much, was to fast track me to seminary. I mean, because if you believe in God...
In the Episcopal Church, you need to be in leadership because you're so unique.
Right. And everybody was so confused. Like,
what?
Wow, your belief is so intense. I mean, my belief in God wasn't that intense, but in terms of everybody else,
it was
very, very, like, intense.
Because the Bible was true and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, stuff like that.
So, here's the quote from 2008 Easter sermon. You're there with your children dressed in their Sunday suits and dresses.
Okay, you're not there with your children. I'm sorry, that's where you've gone wrong.
No, let's just say you're a visitor. You say, hey, let's go. Look, I we have been to church for years. Let's go to church on Easter morning with our children.
Okay,
and see. Wow, it's a cathedral. It's a beautiful place. Let's go see what this is like.
Okay, I was gonna say more likely that you're a small, wizened old lady can't hear, and it's Easter Sunday morning,
and so you don't know what's going on.
Imagine me in church, angry already. Okay, go.
It's important for Christians to be set free from the idea that the resurrection was an extraordinary physical event which restored to life Jesus's original earthly body. The resurrection of Jesus ought not to be seen in physical terms, but as a new spiritual reality.
Yes. It's a spiritual reality.
Yeah, see, well, you might wonder what that means. What kind of spiritual reality are you talking about? But he explains. He says, the disciples merely, quote, felt his presence after his death. And the gospel accounts in the Bible were not, quote, historical records as we write history today.
Let's just kind of recreate this today scenario. Like that anymore, because we're pretty lazy. So our histories today are pretty lame.
So let's recreate this scenario. So, okay. All right. So the 12 come into Jerusalem. Everything's happy because they're gonna, they're gonna take down Rome, even though Jesus has told them several million times, "We're not gonna take down Rome. I'm gonna be crucified." But they didn't listen to him. So anyway, they get there. They're happy, and sure enough, he's handed over. Jesus.
He dies a brutal death.
He dies a brutal death, and they're all very sad. But
why does he have to die too? I'm confused about why. Why did Jesus die? Because I think it was like he was showing us how to be good people. So
right. Well, no, he wanted to show us. He just wanted to show. He wanted to stretch out his arms of love to show us how much he loves us.
Okay.
And how special we are. I mean, if we're
like a very, very brutal and terrifying death.
Right.
That's
right.
Okay.
And to be in solidarity with all the suffering people in the world.
Okay.
I mean, if you look at the cross, the thing you should come away with is the idea that you're very, very special.
Yeah. Well, I do. When I look at the cross,
and
I feel special.
People who don't accept you as you are really crucifying you too. So anyway, he died, and they're very sad. They're very sad. But then, like on Monday, they're sitting around, or Sunday, they're sitting around, and, I just kind of feel good, I just feel like this presence... I feel really like, I'm not like sad anymore, and I just
and
have
I
this
think
kind
that
of
Jesus just rose again in my heart.
Yeah, I mean, my heart just feels so I'm calm and at peace. I think I'm gonna take this very expensive parchment that, I don't have. and I'm just gonna record my feelings as if it was like really he rose from the dead, even though like I'm just feeling really happy. And I'm going to just,
I'm going to preserve it.
I'm going to preserve
it. A very difficult way that includes my own death.
Right. Because that's how we ancient people are. We don't, think in terms of really things really happening. We're like 21st century Episcopalians who, are really uber spiritual. and just feel things a lot. And so, and we write what we feel, just like yeah. Episcopalians, and we live into our feelings.
We live into the tension
of our feelings. And so the gospel accounts are just, you know.
I mean, I know that a lot of the people who saw Jesus rose again in their hearts were then later killed brutally for that special feeling that they had.
Right.
But I think it was, you can understand, because
Rome wasn't allowing them to live into
their special feelings,
which is really cruel. And so, you know, some of them were skinned alive. I mean, I would rather be skinned alive than let go of my special feelings. I mean, you can take my skin, but you can't take my feels.
I know how. You know what? That's what's holding the Chinese Christians together who are being persecuted. They wake up and discover that Jesus is risen again in their hearts. And they're like, you know what? I'm happy with the way things are going now. And I just want to keep on being persecuted for this.
So these accounts were published in the first century in the areas where these events, imaginary events took place. And everyone read them and understood, oh, the disciples are talking about their feelings.
Yeah.
And I want to have feels like that. I want to feel like people are alive in my heart.
People.
And so they became part of the Jesus movement. And it was, you know, Jesus is dead, but they became part of this movement of feels.
Yeah.
And so it all just, and then, but later, you know, 20 years later, a group of general regular Baptists or whatever came along and read the Bible literally. And thought that the apostles were really talking about a literal bodily resurrection. And that's where it all came from. It was the Baptist fault back in the second century. Yeah, and
those people are bad, man.
Right.
Like, they are not good like us. And they don't have the good kinds of feelings that we have about, you know, political things.
Right.
All the things.
But fortunately, we've gone back and recovered the true Jesus and his true apostles, who were really Episcopal bishops.
Progressive.
Right.
They were.
Right.
Right. So, but what's going to happen to this guy?
Well, I don't nothing. Let's see. So senior Anglicans have rounded on this, his unorthodox views, claiming they're inappropriate for someone who is an interim doctor of the Anglican Center in Rome.
They're
inappropriate for someone who claims to be a Christian. They're not just... he will be central to discussions and meetings with Pope Francis. The Bishop of Maidstone, Reverend Rod Thomas, said believing in the literal resurrection of Jesus was a fundamental Christian belief. Yes.
I mean, that's good for an Anglican bishop to come right out and say, like, it's really important that Jesus rose from the dead.
To believe things like that and, you know, the virgin birth. And
I know. So this is forcing some Anglican bishops to admit...
It must be very painful for them.
Vague notions about God.
It must be very painful for these guys. I mean, Rod Thomas apparently is a really good guy, but it must be very painful for a number of these bishops to have to say things. The physical resurrection of Christ is part of the Church of England doctrine. It's also part of the Bible. And I joyfully...
It's part of the Church of England doctrine. Nobody knows how it got there.
But, hey, it's there in our documents.
For some bizarre reason. Our formularies include a belief in the resurrection. I don't know why. I can't remember.
Yeah, and I joyfully proclaim it every opportunity I get. So, yes, good. He believes in the resurrection. And the Reverend Dr. Lee Gatiss, who we know, our friend, director of the church's biggest evangelical group, said the situation was, quote, unquote, utterly bizarre. And absolutely inappropriate. I'm probably Gatiss, but that's a very British thing to say.
It's inappropriate. It's inappropriate.
Right. That's very British, Dr. Gatiss, if you're listening.
Yeah. Okay, and then he has a better quote than that. Go on.
Yeah. And he says Dr. Shepherd should resign. Great, yes. If it's true that he does not believe in the bodily resurrection of Jesus, then I don't think he should have been ordained as a minister of the Anglican Communion in the first place. Yes.
Yeah,
right.
But go on.
The Bible is absolutely clear. He mentioned the Bible.
Yeah. That's...
What about our formularies? The Bible is absolutely clear, as are the Anglican formularies, that Jesus died and rose again. It's the whole point and center of our good news for the world. Yes. See, you can always count on Lee Gatiss to say the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
He does it well.
No, but then he has a great example of what this is like.
Okay. He added that having a senior figure who does not, Anglican figure who does not believe in Jesus' resurrection, was akin to asking Nigel Farage to lead the Remain campaign. Would you provide context for that, so our listener would understand?
Oh, it's about Brexit. He's just made a Brexit joke.
Yeah, but who knows what Brexit is?
I know, but I can't explain it. Like, again, Google.
Who's Nigel Farage?
He's one of the, I think he's anti-Semitic, and he's like, I don't really know, but.
But you laughed hilariously, like you knew.
I mean, I've been watching Nigel Farage jokes for like, I spent 5 hours last night watching Nigel Farage jokes.
I don't think he's.
I don't really get them all, but. And the Brexit people or the no Brexit, I don't know. I can't really understand. They're trying to leave, but they're not trying to leave. They're kind of like Episcopalians, the English.
If I were in England, I don't know that I'd want to be in with the European Union in at all. I'm happy with Brexit. And I think that would be.
No. Let's not talk about Brexit.
But I would also want a Brexit from Britain, too.
Let's not talk about Brexit right now.
Fair. All right.
What I appreciate, even though I don't totally get it, is that Lee Gatiss would use Brexit to articulate what's wrong with.
It's great.
That's wonderful.
I remember when I beat him arm wrestling.
Yeah.
When he visited.
I don't know what that means for you, but.
It means that when it comes to masculine manliness, who cares how many, how many initials he has after his name, or that he's in charge of the largest evangelical organization in England, or that he's written lots of books and is very important and central figure in the Reformed Anglican
and
movement.
And can make Brexit jokes.
I beat him at arm wrestling, so there's the,
Okay.
So all of that pales by comparison. So the next thing he said.
I mean, I feel a sense of bitterness has clouded the air.
So he should stand down for the immediately to be or be replaced for the honor and integrity of the Church of England. Yes, very good. So the Reverend Dr. Ian Paul, who's another Orthodox person in the Church of England, a theologian and a member of the General Synod, said Dr. Shepherd's view contradicted the Apostles' Creed, an ancient statement of faith which unites all Christian denominations. Is this really a good moment to appoint as Justin Welby's envoy to Rome someone who doesn't believe in the bodily resurrection of Jesus, he asked.
I think it's a good moment. What better moment?
Right.
Would there be a better moment?
Dr. Shepherd's appointment came after the previous ambassador, Archbishop Bertard Dottori, stood down following accusations of sexual misconduct.
There you go.
I kind of think that's a perfect ambassador to Rome.
Which one?
The one who had the sexual misconduct charge. I mean, kind of fit in with the natives there.
Oh my gosh.
I shouldn't have said that.
You're offending everyone, as usual. Bad person.
So Dr. Stephen Platten.
Well, I mean, there's sexual misconduct, there's denial of the resurrection.
They just need to find a guy who has both of those.
Yeah, and that person would be great.
He emphatically, Dr. Platten, head of the governors of the Anglican Center in Rome, told. Why do the English people spell center wrong? It's center.
It's centre. Center.
They're spelling it wrong. In Rome, told the Telegraph that Dr. Shepherd, an extremely good theologian, had been in conversation.
Wait a minute. How can you be an extremely good theologian if you don't believe in the bodily resurrection of Jesus? What does extremely good theologian even mean then? He's an extremely good theologian.
That's like we had lots of extremely good, Christian scholars in our seminary.
No, that's right? Absurd. He's right. An extremely good theologian.
Right.
That's also like saying he's not a bad theologian. Like if you're English and you say he's an extremely good theologian, don't you mean that he's, actually pretty mediocre?
I think this person really likes him. This is very good. This is in favor of him.
He's an extremely good theologian.
When you say, if an English person says he's an extremely good theologian, I think that means.
He's like, actually like God.
He's like, yeah. God is an extremely good theologian.
Oh, okay. I had it backwards then.
So,
can't be an extremely good theologian if you don't believe in the resurrection.
This is, I think, the best statement in the entire. This person, this Dr. Stephen Platten, added, he, that's Dr. Shepherd, emphatically believes in the resurrection of Jesus Christ.
Okay.
It's just a matter of how one understands that.
Oh, I see.
This is the classic thing, you know.
How do we understand the resurrection?
Of course I believe in resurrection.
It's resurrection.
My spirit is resurrected every time I think of daisies coming up in the field. I have a resurrections moment. We're resurrection people.
Yeah, it's true.
I believe in resurrection. So
we are resurrection.
This is how
people.
Episcopalians get around the whole creed thing. They just stand up and they say the creed. I believe in the resurrection.
But
the dead.
You.
And that's what they mean. They mean I have an inner feeling of resurrection.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel Jesus in my heart. So.
Or someone.
Yeah,
or
someone.
I don't know who's
yeah.
there, but it's probably not Jesus.
A spokesman for the Archbishop said interim appointments were made by the center in Rome and was unable to say whether the Archbishop approved the appointment or telephoned Dr. Shepherd, adding that he was a priest of good standing and due diligence was used when appointing him to the temporary role, which is a way of saying we knew.
Yeah.
We knew.
We totally knew and we don't care.
Yeah.
And it's fine, so.
When asked if the Archbishop of Canterbury was uncomfortable with Dr. Shepherd's 2008 sermon, the spokesman declined to comment. Oh. Now, of course, Archbishop Welby himself does believe in the resurrection, the literal bodily resurrection of Jesus, but...
Does he? To well, what effect?
Well, he does. He said in 2017, Archbishop Welby criticized those who presumed to know better than the disciples what happened after Jesus' execution. So apparently he does believe in the physical resurrection, but hey, you know, if you don't, that's fine. No big deal.
Yeah.
Hey, I believe in not murdering babies, but if you want to murder babies, hey, who am I to stop you? I believe in the basis of Christian faith, but hey, if you want to not believe that and also have a pulpit and teach and, hey, be our ambassador room, no problem.
Yeah.
It's whatever you want, man.
Well, it's all about love. And
yeah.
All my feelings of love, of which I have many feelings of love. So,
yeah.
I think that we should keep our
Victoria
thing.
We should watch more
time.
Episodes of the Victoria thing. But
we
just
might not.
In
we
short,
might just watch something
it
else.
It seemed more like a modern soap opera set in Victorian clothing.
Yeah, it seemed more like Hallmark meets Christmas Hallmark meets Queen Victoria.
Right.
In which everybody learns the true meaning of Christmas and also says a lot of very historically inaccurate things like...
what Albert says, I just remember growing up and having these wonderful Christmases or something like that, and you've ruined my Christmas by...
Yeah. You're ruining my Christmas. What?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, so it's a little bit problematic, historically speaking.
Yeah, and all the, like, we hate slavery.
Well, that was probably true during her time.
People
because,
really hating slavery.
Yeah, because
ordinary
Wilberforce,
people really...
The Wilberforce had already, yeah, that by 1861, when the Civil War was breaking out in America, that's what this set in. So, yeah,
okay.
England had already done away with the slave.
No, they were trying to sell them during the program.
No, they weren't.
Yeah. The woman came into property, and the property that she came into was a bunch of slaves, and she was convinced that they
were...
Well,
then that's ahistorical, because England had already done away with the slave trade by that time.
Oh, okay. Well, then there's so many problems.
Right. Then, let's see what... Okay, so we'll do that
yeah,
next.
Yeah, and let's not do... I think we should move on with our day, because very important things are going to happen today, like... You are going to take the car and replace and get them to put a new light on the front of the car so that when we drive at night.
I wish you wouldn't say that publicly, because now people know. I mean, that's an easy thing to fix in a car. I mean, I could just go to the auto shop and buy the light thingy and put it back on. But now you've told everyone that I'm incompetent.
You're not incompetent.
So that we have to take it to the shop.
You are going to do something that I've been begging you to do for weeks and weeks and weeks, and I'm super grateful, and I'm so happy about it. I thought I would have a little celebratory time, an Anglican celebration, where I celebrate the feelings of resurrection in my heart.
Yeah, well, all the man points I gained by beating Lee Gatus at arm wrestling are now destroyed with the... light bulb thing. Thank you.
I think that you should know that being able to pay for the light bulb to be replaced is as important as being able to replace it yourself. In the mind of a person of any gender, whatever, or
otherkin. Sounds like a stuffed animal, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's because there was a stuffed animal with kin on the end of it, but now otherkin. You could being able to pay somebody else to do it is as if Jesus rose again in my heart. It doesn't have to be the bodily resurrection. So
there is that.
The distinction between the two is not important. So, and on that note, thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next week.